There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 886, May 17th, 2021. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. We start with bad news and good news. The bad news is no Grand Prix in Istanbul. Good news, doubleheader at the track owned by Red Bull. And now back to Mr. Rogers, the El Matador of podcasting.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Red Bull must win in Monaco. Perez needs big, big comeback this weekend. And LCH? He's just relaxing, having a pina colada, and having a great time. I want to remind everybody, we need your contributions. Keep this program on the servers. Just click on the F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. I want to thank Gary Patrick. Thank you, Gary. You are the machismo. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Very good, sir. Thank you. Moi is feeling mighty fine because hopefully the virus is fading away. And a Grand Prix is coming, the crown jewel of Formula One, with a surprise. Fans in the stands. And Mr. Rogers, since we like motorsports and music here in the Palatial Studios, today we have a goodie bag, which we haven't had in a while. And this goodie bag is featuring the Donna Summer segment, and we shall explain later. How is the Duke of Dijon doing?
The Duke of Dijon is doing mighty fine. Went to Laguna Seca over the weekend. Friend of mine was racing in the Masters historical races. And it was fun. There were some Formula One cars. But unfortunately, we had rain and cold. And a lot of people were timid. Didn't want to throw their F1 car into the barriers. But I still had a good time. Drove my Traction Avant to the races. Everybody loved my car. Everybody loved F1 Weekly. And everybody loved me. Nasser?
I remember when you took me to San Francisco in that car. And all the people who you told me were French people recognized the car right away. And how big their eyes were to see this car in San Francisco. Remember that wonderful day we had?
That was a wonderful day. We were having a great time. We were cruising down Embarcadero. And the tourists from France were freaking out because there he was, the Duke of Dijon.
Yes, interesting. And sir, as far as the preview of Monaco Grand Prix is concerned, as is normally the case here, he who shall take pole shall take victory. I heard an interesting comment, I think it was from Peter Windsor on his video, that basically what he was saying, Barcelona track is even harder than Monaco not to win from pole position or front row. Mercedes front row lockout should give victory number 4 of the season to car number 44, because here in Principality it will be hard, if not impossible, for even the mighty Max to pass the Finnish Rubinho. Now, if Max takes pole, I will be very surprised if Perez is second fastest in quali. Monte Carlo has not been a good hunting ground for Max, even though Red Bull has won the race with 3 different drivers, Seb, Weber, and his Aussie compadre, Daniel Ricciardo. Now, you know, they've been talking about and a lot of expectations and a fear, and it will happen sooner or later, of Lewis and Max getting into a let's get physical. What could be better place than Monte Carlo for these two to take out each other, and Pierre Gasly wins Monaco Grand Prix. What say you?
Ha! Well, Olivier Panis would love to see somebody from France win in Monaco. But these people are so smart. There's so much at stake that these two guys, I know that Zach Brown said that it's inevitable they will be a coming together. But I disagree with that. These guys are smart. They want to finish the race. And that's not going to happen. Points are everything. And both of these guys know that points, points, points wins championships, championships, championships.
But you know, last year, I believe it was last year when Max gave Lewis a little love tap and they touched. And speaking of Olivier Panis, you know, Monaco has been a pretty good place for French drivers to win their first Grand Prix. Panis and Patrick Depailler and Jean-Pierre Beltoise, Maurice Trintignant going back many years. So it's all good. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't see any other team taking pole next weekend. However, time, circumstances, and performances are flashing red warning lights. If Bottas starts from pole position, he may not make it to the top step of the podium. I hope I'm wrong, because it'll be nice to see him get his first win of the season in Monte Carlo, as Raikkonen, Hakkinen, and Keke Rosberg all won here for Finlandia, and so did Nico Rosberg, but he was racing as a Deutschen driver, German driver. So, what do you think? What's going to happen? Who will we see? Will it be the same three faces?
Unfortunately, we already know that it's going to be the same three faces. That, you know, it's not much we can do about, unless something bizarre happens, and there's no bizarro on the menu so far. So it's just the next three faces. Now, don't get me wrong. Maybe these guys will come down with stomach flu, and we'll see Ricciardo get his first win with McLaren, but I don't think so.
Well, you know, speaking of Ricciardo, obviously he is trying to get up to speed so he can beat Lando Norris, his teammate, every race. He was recently quoted as saying, "The McLaren is just very different from last year's Renault. The difference between those two teams is greater than between Red Bull and Renault. The hardest part is that I'm having to change the style of driving that I've been using for many years." And of course, he was also asked about what I just said, Lando Norris getting the upper hand so far, most of the season so far, and what the critics are saying. And he responded by saying, very rightly so, "I don't pay attention to what they're saying or writing. But you know what? People have expressed concern because of his choice of teams and the pack Bagaji has." He admits that he may not win a Formula One championship, which is very sad because the guy is extremely talented. And this is the guy who put an end to Seb's party, as far as I'm concerned. Some people are saying the same thing about Max, that he will not win a championship. But I'm sure, you know, if these drivers have the package number 44, they will deliver like FedEx. Absolutely, positively. What say you, UPS man?
Well, you're absolutely correct. No package, no delivery. I hate to say it, but I think if Lewis Hamilton does not retire at the end of 2021 and continues, I hate to say it, but Ricciardo will not get a championship. Verstappen will not get a championship. There's only one guy that, if he stays at Mercedes, whoever his teammate is, Russell, I don't know, those championships will keep rolling in like the gravy train.
But this gravy train has its main terminal in Compton, but the gravy is very spicy.
Love Compton.
I'm sure you do. Have you looked at the weather forecast for Monaco?
I have not, sir.
You know what is interesting about, and I noticed this just a few days ago, this year Monaco Grand Prix is not clashing with the Indy 500. Isn't that wonderful?
A wonderful show for you tonight.
Because, you know, once it has with Indy 500, that also makes for a great weekend. But I think, you know, Monaco Grand Prix one weekend, Indy 500. And I will be at the Indy 500 if all goes well. Looking forward to it. So we'll see how these things pan out. Any hope for a Ferrari on the podium?
Oh, you mean Monaco's favorite son? Charles Leclerc. No, not a chance. And they know they're suffering. I mean, it's not going to be one of those things where we're not going to see a fluke. You know, this isn't NASCAR, Nasser, where we get a different winner every weekend. This is Formula One. This is Formula 44, really. It is what it is. Let's just move along and see where Fernando lands, because really that's the next best thing to look at, is where Fernando El Machismo de España is going to finish in Monaco. The Alpines need to finish high, but we'll see what happens. And the best part is Fernando has become so honest and sincere and so loving that he's really praising too many drivers too much, and I wish he would knock it off.
Well, you know, speaking of Alpine and Monte Carlo, I remember back in the early 70s, they were very successful in the Monte Carlo rally. Do you remember those days?
I do. Some of my favorite stuff.
Yes, and they were also blue cars. And the Alpine Formula One Blue is a very beautiful looking car. But, you know, Nando has to first catch up to his teammate before he can nibble at the feet of Max and Bottas. And once he has past them, he will meet a familiar face from years gone by.
Well, Fernando knows that the Alpine is not up to speed. He understands that Ocon, who's been with Alpine for a while, is doing a much better job. He admits to it. El Machismo is a loving person who admits to his faults, as he's always done in the past. So, he's a terrific guy. And praising Ocon and everybody else. I think it's just charming. I wish more drivers were as loving as Fernando.
Well, you know, one thing I will say, if there is one driver who knows, apart from Lewis Hamilton, how good Lewis Hamilton is, and that's Fernando Alonso. And the fact that when Sebastian was winning championship after championship, at that time, Nando said, he still has ways to go to reach Lewis's stage. And Lewis has dusted everybody since those comments were made. So it's no surprise that Nando is so complimentary of Lewis Hamilton. He's earned that respect, right?
Absolutely, sir.
Yes. Len, you're right. It should be called Formula 44. And Formula 44 has a teammate also, but you know, what can you do? Remember when the stock market collapsed and the joke was 401k has become 201k?
I do.
Yeah, so they should have Team 44, the second car being number 22. Cut in half.
Wow, half Schumacher all over again.
Exactly. Now, the question being asked on different media outlets and other podcasts, practice starts, then qualifying and race. So, from the start of practice, who will be the first driver to go into the guardrails, Nikita Mazepin or Yuki Tsunoda?
Yuki Tsunoda.
I will be shocked if one of them do not hit the guardrail between practice, qualifying, and race. Wouldn't it be funny if they take each other out?
And then hug each other at the end.
Oh, yes, of course. That's required now. We live in a PC world. So what else can we expect, sir? Anything expect from George Russell or people who can spring a surprise, Carlito Sainz, of course he's in a Ferrari, and who else? Who else could do? Oh, have you heard the big news about the Gulf paint scheme livery on special livery for Monte Carlo Grand Prix? Which is great news because this is an iconic paint scheme, and I cannot think of any scheme apart from this and the JPS Lotus that, if you ask a long time motorsports fan, what are the great liveries? Most of the people will mention these two liveries. Do you like the design of that car, sir, the paint scheme?
Yes, I think the livery is great. I like the vintages. And what I submit to Formula One is they should do what the NFL does. Every once in a while, a game is called a throwback game where everybody wears uniforms from the 50s or 60s, or they had some funny uniforms back in the old days, especially like the Steelers and what have you. And I think Formula One should do that. I think every once in a while we should have a throwback to the 60s where we have the cars dressed up like the liveries that they had in those days, with a few maybe small changes, but it'd be fun to see the drivers and in vintage looking fire suits. I mean, I know they have to be up to standard, and they would be, But to see Dunlop, you know, on the chest and the vintage, I like that stuff.
I would love to see the Gitan logo on one of the cars. That will be so beautiful. But talking of throwback, in NASCAR it's called retro livery, and they also do that, which is a very good idea. But I want to ask you a question, sir. In this day and age we live in, John Surtees had a sponsor which said on the side of his Formula One car, Durex, a safe formula. Would they allow that?
Maybe not. But I still think the throwback to a different period is a great idea for Formula One. It'll bring the old guys back out, you know, the vintages.
Yeah. You know, another thing they can do, I just thought of it, that maybe they can, you know, they're doing the second race, the sprint race. Maybe they can do a race with drivers who raced, retired 5 years ago and just throw them in. Can you imagine a race with Carlos Reutemann, Ricardo Patrese, and R. Nige? Wouldn't that would bring a lot of crowd, man, I think.
It would be. The problem is geriatrics, the vintages, Old Man River. It's a lot of liability involved in sort of those kinds of things. But hey, I'm open to anything. If it's vintage, I want to see it. Come on down. I would like to see, to be honest with you, this is my fantasy, is to have a full paddock of the first year of Formula One cars, 1950, and all the drivers are in a 1950 machinery, and we have a race in that kind of machinery. Could you imagine the machismo-ness?
Yeah, I saw Formula One cars from the days gone by at Indy, U.S. Grand Prix, and also in Kota, and it's just so beautiful to see these cars, you know, Saudia Williams, and JPS Lotus, and Hesketh, and whatever. It's just, you know, especially for geezers like us, who are following in the 70s, and in some cases 60s also, that is a nice throwback. But, you know, as Lewis Hamilton said, cash is king.
Ah, that's very, very true, Ness. Cash is indeed king. So why don't we take a quick break, and we'll be back with Motorsports Mondial after this brief message.
La ligne droite est plus courte que la première, il est un peu loin. DRS ouvert, l'accélération vers Ascari, ce sera pas avant Ascari, ça ne peut qu'être après la chicane d'Ascari, il faut encore tenir, allez Pierre, il faut tenir, jusque dans les derniers instants, il reste la parabolique tout au bout là-bas, elle est loin, elle est infiniment loin cette parabolique, écarte-toi, ne le laisse pas t'aspirer. Il se met à l'intérieur, il fait de la récupération d'énergie pour essayer de sortir de la parabolique. Elle est presque là, cette victoire. Accélère, accélère. Oui, il va aller la chercher. Ne lâche pas. La victoire de Pierre Gasly. Il l'a fait. Victoire de Pierre Gasly. Victoire d'AlphaTauri. La victoire française. 24 ans, 3 mois et 18 jours après Olivier Panis. La France, de nouveau victorieuse en Formule 1, il l'a fait, Pierre Gasly, exceptionnel, victoire historique, Pierre Gasly, vainqueur du Grand Prix d'Italie. Ah, il y a de la déception, bien sûr, chez McLaren, écoutez ces noms, Trintignant, Sever, Beltoise, Lafitte, Depailler, Jabouille, Arnoux, Pironi, Prost, Tambay, Alesi, Panis, et aujourd'hui, Pierre Gasly, vainqueur d'un Grand Prix de Formule 1. Oui, monsieur, oui, madame.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com, Clark Rogers here, your host, and now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And we take a flight on Braniff International to the Bugatti circuit at Le Mans in your Shangri-La, also known as Francia for MotoGP Acción. It's Miller time as Aussie-made Jack Miller takes victory over two local yokels, Johann Zarco and pole sitter Fabio Quartararo. Mark Marquez, when I watched this race, Mark Marquez was leading and I was very excited, but then he crashed out, spun out, whatever. He got back in the race, but then he had another crash and that was the end of his day. But very impressive performance for him, and he is the LCH of two wheels. There is no question about it. You know, since he was out with his injury, almost everybody won a race. So that's good for him and good for them. Okay, sir, Indy cars from the Indy road course. It took only three races for Romain Grosjean to grab his first pole position since 2011. But victory went to Dutch boy Rinus Wicke, three first-time winners in the first five races of the season, which is very good for the future of Indy cars and these young kids. I know, Mr. Rogers, you watch this race with a heavy heart, as your favorite driver in IndyCar racing, Marco, was MIA. Did you watch any of the action, sir?
I did watch some of the action. It was very, very exciting. I was so proud of Romain Grosjean. And to finish the race, to get on the pro podium, it's fantastic. And Rinus Wicke is doing an outstanding job. You know, he's somewhat friends with Verstappen, being Dutch. So it's very, very fun. They probably call each other. I'm really happy Rinus got this win, and we're going to see a lot more from him very soon.
You know, I have not checked on it, but I think I saw on a Facebook a posting that his victory came on the same day in May as Max's first win in Formula One, because the Spanish Grand Prix takes place in May. I think that's true. I've not checked on it, but that's interesting. And, you know, we interviewed Rinus a couple of years ago here in St. Pete. So hopefully once the pandemic is over, we'll sit down and chat with him more. You know, it's interesting. In 2009 Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, there was a big, like a tent area of this Orange Army, you know, the Dutch fans, obviously all supporting Max. I was talking to one of them, and he says to me, my next door neighbor, his son is racing in America. And I said, who? He goes, Rinus Wicke. So it's a small world, huh?
Very tiny.
Yes. Okay, sir. So Romain Grosjean ended up finishing second with Spaniard Alex Palou third. And Alex is the kid who won the season opener in Sweet Home, Alabama a few weeks ago. Now, some sad news on the IndyCar front. I was hoping to take my nephew there. But the Toronto race in July has been canceled courtesy of COVID. So we'll see what happens. Sir, the Turkish Grand Prix being canceled, it came and went faster than an Istanbul minute. Disappointed? And are you happy that Austria is going to hold two races?
Actually, I'm really happy that Austria is going to hold two races. They did last year, and it worked out really, really well.
Yes, but the Turkish track is very nice too. But the old, I don't know if you remember the old Austrian track, the Österreichring, that was just fantastic. That was one of the that track, Monza and Silverstone, without these chicane, they were real, you needed big TF to go there fast and be on pole. Okay, sir, moving on to Indy Lights, Swedish driver Linus Lindqvist was the winner in race one. David Malukas from the Windy City took second, but in the second race, Malukas held off in a very close finish chap from Cambridge, England, Toby Sowery. And you know, not too long ago, moi, Dr. Mark, and Mr. Brazier, we watched a Formula One race in Cambridge, England, and enjoyed some curry at the same time. So it is a small world. Okay, sir, Alex Pironi from Australia was third. And he is the man who was flying very high in a 2019 Formula 3 race at Monza. And if somebody wants to see this, it's available on YouTube. It will surprise how high this car went. And sir, this American kid of Nigerian descent, I think he's from New York, Ugo Ugochukwu, who was drafted into the McLaren driver development program. He was on pole at a go-kart event in Genk. So he's doing very good. And I know the main feature he did not win, but he's making a good name for himself. So I will be very interested in seeing him in a year or two move into single-seater racing. And hopefully we will be there to interview him. Okay, sir, Mr. Rogers, now we come to the goodie bag, the Donna Summer segment. Back in 1984, she came out with an album called Cats Without Claws. And it got me thinking, what if we had a motorsports billboard top 10 of drivers who would spin well on this LP? Let me explain what I'm talking about here. This is about drivers, we can call them number twos, who were in a championship winning team, but the man and the team was trying to keep them down. These luckless and in some cases winless drivers were facing not only headwind, but also strong tailwind that made them look like Rubinho's off the road. Shall we proceed, sir?
Let me talk to Pedro.
Yep.
He says yes.
Text has come. Number 10 on the Billboard in 2009 from Ireland. Not 2009, 1999. Correction. That's what happens when you're dealing with number twos. From Ireland, Eddie Irvine. He started the season on a high note by winning in Australia and also captured three more wins. Mika Hakkinen beat him to the championship by only 2 points. This is the season where Michael Schumacher broke his leg at Silverstone. He came back for the final two races to help Eddie become world champion, and this is the reason why Eddie has made it to the top 10. Amazingly, Michael qualified on the pole for both races, and it is sad to say, and it was very pathetic to see, that he would let Eddie Irvine pass for the lead, not once but twice at Sepang. Leading Matt Bishop to tell me, had Irvine won the championship that year, he would have become first world champion ever without taking a pole position during the championship winning season. So there you have it. Number 9, Mark Webber. In 2010, the Aussie mate almost became world champion had it not been getting into deep kimchi by his crash in Korea. You remember that race, sir?
It's one of our favorites. I remember Sai riding his horse.
And do you remember who won that race?
My buddy.
Yes. And Mark led the championship till the final race in Abu Dhabi, where both he and Alonso were surprised by Sebastian Vettel. Alonso was also petrified by Petrov. And that's when we saw the flight of the Spanish bird in Yas Marina. 3 years later, while still teammates at Red Bull, Seb took his fourth successive championship, winning 13 races during the season, including the last 9. That season, Webber was the grill with no fire and failed to win a single race. Which is hard to believe that your teammate wins the championship and you don't win a single race. Number 8, a motorsports manager once said, I believe it was Jean Todt, but I'm not 100% sure, that if you want to win, hire a Finn. But all Finns don't have shark fins, as Ron Dennis found out when he hired Heikki Kovalainen as teammate to his lucky dog in 2008. A late race done blowed up for Massa in Hungary led to the famous Ronster message to Kovi, welcome to the world of winning. And apart from pole position at Silverstone, rest of the season for Heikki Kovalainen was welcome to the world of Lewis Hamilton. Number 7, our favorite, Fisico. Like Eddie, Fisico started the 2005 season by taking victory in Australia. He was a one-hit wonder of that season, while the championship-winning wonder was his teammate. As Mr. Morrison would say, I can't seem to find his name and face in my mind. Who won 7 races, including the epic battle and one of my all-time favorite races, at Imola, the 2005 San Marino Grand Prix, over Michael Schumacher. The story and score was the same in 2006. The Roman Gladiator's only Grand Prix success came in Malaysia. Bravo, bravo. 1 win per season makes him eligible to be on this hit parade. Number 6, Jochen Maas. Wonder how many of our listeners remember him. The ex-Merchant Navy man from Bonn, Germany, was torpedoed by his teammate in the 1976 season. Maas was winless while teammate James Hunt took the title in a dramatic season finale in Japan, taking victory 6 times during the season, scoring 69 points compared to 19 for Maas. Number 5. Valtteri, before entering the haunted house of Hamilton, was badass Bottas. Formula Renault Euro Cup winner, and in that he beat Mr. Daniel Ricciardo, which is no mean feat, and then he captured the GP3 series, which was very impressive because halfway through the series he was nowhere to be found in the top 3. Before arriving in Formula 1 with Williams, he made his debut on the Billboard chart during the 2019 season, and we all know how wonderful that was. I was listening to a discussion about Bottas, and there was a talk that he's a very good driver. He keeps Lewis Hamilton honest. He can beat him in the qualifying, but he just cannot beat him on a regular basis in the races. And all of that is true, you know. I mean, it's not easy to beat Lewis or Sebastian Vettel. So whether he will ever be a number one driver at another team, that I seriously doubt. Do you think if they let him go at Mercedes, he will be number one someplace?
No. His days are, I mean, once you're typecast, I mean, you're done. You're always going to be typecast. It's tough business. Showbiz is not fun sometimes.
Yeah, you know, it's like the FDA approved, you know, and if it's LCH approved as a good driver, you know his dishes are done. Okay, sir, we move on to number four, Clay Regazzoni. He was a great, I was a great fan of Clay when he was with Ferrari and Niki. The Swiss driver was a one-hit wonder in 1975, but won at the most important place, Parco Monza. His teammate from Austria, Niki Lauda, took 5 wins, scoring 64.5 points compared to 25 for Rega. And Rega, so people remember this, he won the very first Formula One Grand Prix in Long Beach, and he also gave Frank Williams his first Grand Prix win in 1979 at Silverstone. Now we're coming up to the top three, sir. Number three, Heinz-Harald Frentzen. 1987, JV, 7 wins plus the Drivers' Championship. And JV, in case anybody has forgotten, is Jacques Villeneuve. Frentzen did finish second in the championship, but the score was 42 to JV's 81. So that's a huge difference in the same car. And Frentzen was one-hit wonder in the San Marino Grand Prix. And all this from a guy who was supposed to be faster than Michael Schumacher when they were teammates at the Sauber sports car team, which was known as Sauber Mercedes. Number two, Mike Spence. In 1965, his Lotus teammate was Jim Clark. The Scottish farmer won the first 6 races in Formula One that he took part in. Jimmy missed round 2 at Monaco, but put the time to good use by winning the Indy 500. Mike Spence had 1 podium and finished 8th in the championship with 10 points, while his teammate scored 54 points and was, of course, world champion. Just as a side note, 1965 was the season where 9 of the 10 races were won by British drivers. The only exception was the season finale in Mexico City, which was historical on 3 counts. It was the maiden win for Richie Ginther from Southern California, maiden win for Honda, and maiden win for Goodyear. Jim Clark lost his life on April 7, 1968 at Hockenheim Ring, and Mike Spence lost his life on May 7, 1968 at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, both driving Lotus cars. In the case of Jim Clark, he was driving a Lotus Formula 2 machine. Sir, can we have a little drum roll for number one?
Are you ready? Drum roll, please.
Merci beaucoup. Undisputed number one on the Cats Without Claws album and certified by Casey Kasem, Man from Down Under, Dave Walker. The wonder he produced in 1972 was as teammate to championship-winning Emerson Fittipaldi, who at that time became the youngest world champion at the age of 25. And throughout the season, Dave Walker did not score a single point. Point to ponder here is how on earth did he get the Lotus drive? And Mr. Rogers, we end this segment with some nice music from the lady herself. Here is Miss Donna Summer with the song that explains the segment itself. Thank you for listening. See you soon.
I wish everybody a great weekend in Monaco. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Your reputation, bye.